Welcome to Tuesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Medow with you for the next 60 minutes. 201-939-4513. That is the telephone number. One of two ways for you to interact with us here on the program. You could also hit us up on Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. We'll get into a few different topics over the next 60 minutes. We will address your phone calls as well as your tweets. On NFL.com, they did a nice review of every single rookie class for every single NFL team. We're going to focus on the NFC East. They gave the Giants a B-plus for their rookie class. So we'll go over what Jeremy Bergman, who wrote this article, his details on the Giants rookie class, and we'll get to a variety of other things over the next few minutes. But let's start with this article, Paul, and it's interesting. When you look over the NFC East rookie classes, I think the biggest theme, which the Giants actually avoided, was the injury bug. The Redskins, the Cowboys, and the Eagles, all for the most part, the bulk of their rookie classes did not see a lot of time. And it wasn't that these players weren't good. It was just they could not remain durable. Whereas the Giants, for the most part, with the exception of Davis Webb, and this article also includes the undrafted rookies too, Giants saw a lot of time out of their youngsters, which is a positive, at least in terms of development.
Well, they did. And let's give a big thumbs up to Evan Engram, who quite honestly did take a beating this year. I mean, this is a guy who, coming out of college, was supposed to be a pass-catching tight end who wasn't maybe as physically mature and as strong and as gifted in the blocking phase as a lot of people would like to have seen. We knew that was an area he was going to have to improve. And not only did he willingly take that on, but his body held up. I mean, he got battered.
Oh, and he battled through injuries, yeah.
Fought injury time after time. We know the second half of the season, as a lot of the rookies hit that wall because, you know, they've never played more than maybe 12 games max in a college season before. The last month of the season, I mean, he was just absolutely battered. And he just kept trying to go out there and trying to go out there. And let's not kid ourselves. Everybody knew that he was going to be the number one target downfield this year. I mean, after all the receivers went down in the first month of the season, Evan Engram became the focal point of this passing game.
By default, essentially, yeah.
And so I can only say this. He had a big X on his chest for two-thirds of the year and was able to hold up and fight through it and have a very, very solid season. And his attitude, you know, can't say enough about what a good kid he is. So
led all rookie tight ends in catches and touchdowns, so that was something notable. Like you said, he adapted his role over the course of the season. He went from that complimentary piece to now all of a sudden the number one target in the offense when the entire receiving core went down. So despite all of that, was still able to be productive. I think that says a lot about his rookie year.
And again, showed an eagerness and a willingness to become an all-around tight end. You know, was not shy about trying to become a better blocker. He knows he still has a way to go.
Of course.
You know, he's not going to be a point of attack mauler that Howard Cross was. That's not going to be. But clearly was willing to sacrifice his body, despite the injuries and the bumps and bruises he had throughout the season, to continue to try to improve as a blocker, knowing that ultimately that's where he wants to go.
So Engram finished with 15 games, 11 starts. Then next on the list was the second-round pick, Dalvin Tomlinson, who started every single game his rookie year. One of those players, Paul, like other rookie defensive tackles we've seen in year one, falls under the radar, doesn't jump off the page from a statistical standpoint, but from a consistency standpoint, Dalvin Tomlinson actually had a really solid season. Mm-hmm. It just, to me, goes unnoticed because of the defensive struggles and the fact that it's not as if, like other previous defensive tackles we've seen on this team, he's not a guy that's going to stock up those sack numbers.
Well, I have not seen the All-NFL rookie team yet. Have you seen that
list?
I
have not seen it, no.
I'm not even sure if it's out because it has not surfaced anywhere that I know of. I'd be very surprised if both Engram and Tomlinson are not on that list. I really would. I thought Tomlinson was that good.
Well, I don't know what the numbers offhand for the other rookie defensive tackles are, but you know all it takes is there was a rookie defensive tackle that put up respectable sack numbers and tackle numbers. I could see Tomlinson not making Engram, no argument. He should be on it, without a doubt. I don't know if Tomlinson would necessarily be a lock, though.
I think in looking at him, and I'm not going to argue the stats because you're right. There are some people who would just look at the numbers and say so-and-so had more tackles, so-and-so had more sacks, so-and-so had five forced fumbles, so he's going to be the guy. That can happen. I'm telling you, if you look at the eye test and just the way that that guy played, what I liked about Donovan Tomlinson, there were two things that I thought that you will not see on the stat sheet that made me really like this player. A, rarely got pushed back on his back. This is a defensive tackle who held his line of scrimmage very, very well. And I mean, if you think I'm wrong,
tell me. I'm listening. I'm in agreement with you so far. Yeah.
Didn't see him go backwards very often at all.
Not at all.
All right. That's one. Two, I also saw a guy who did not miss many tackles. You know, when he got his hands on somebody, how many times you remember saying, oh, you know, he got away. And a guy would just slice through one of his arm tackles. No. Donovan Tomlinson, when he got there, he usually brought the guy down. I don't remember thinking to myself that he was one of those Butterfinger guys who was letting folks slip through. Those, to me, are very fundamental things, but they tell you something about the quality of the player, especially as a rookie.
Well, and usually when you look at a rookie season, there's maybe one or two plays, to your point, Paul, that sometimes jump out that you remember, missed tackle, a mental breakdown, right?
No
Something
question.
That led to contribute to a bigger play for the opposition. And really, when you look over the 16 games for Tomlinson, nothing jumps out. And that's a bigger reason why I think he falls under the radar, because he had a quiet season. But just because you have a quiet season doesn't mean that you weren't productive and you weren't settling into the scheme. And I think he did a nice job translating his skill set from college to the pros. It's just a matter of, I think, like any of the other rookie defensive tackles we've seen that have come through the Giants system, is there going to be that significant jump, Paul, from the rookie year to the sophomore campaign? And the reason I bring that up is, remember, if you look at Jonathan Hankins' tenure with the Giants, Paul,
right?
Hankins' tenure from a statistical standpoint, it fluctuated. It went up and down, right? He had that 7-sack season, then all of a sudden he got quiet again, and then jumped up a little bit. I guess when you look at Tomlinson, are we going to get one of those lines that stays across, Paul, or are we going to get the fluctuation like a Jonathan Hankins? That's what I'm anxious to see over the course of his remaining career.
That's a good question. Only time will tell that. I'm looking here, and I just want to let you know, it's according to NFL.com, and I was not dissing you in any way. I was listening to you, but I want to make this note. Dalvin Tomlinson, among NFL rookies this past season, led all defensive tackles, rookie defensive tackles, with 50 tackles. He was number one on the list. 30 solos, 20 assists, had the one sack. The next highest tackle total by a rookie defensive tackle was Devon Godcho of Miami, who had 40.
Okay. Just out of curiosity, is there a way that you can go through the sack totals for the defensive tackles?
Sack totals. Okay.
I'm just curious. I mean, obviously, the fact that he only had one is not going to put him very high,
well,
but I'm curious if somebody else jumped out.
Dietrich Wise of New England had 5 sacks to lead all rookie defensive tackles, and 5 is a healthy number even for a veteran. So
without a doubt,
he's probably going to get some votes. At the same time, he had only 26 tackles. 26, half
That's
of Tomlinson.
That's half, of what Tomlinson did.
Next up would be Caleb Brantley from Cleveland, who had 18 tackles and 2 sacks.
So
that'd be hard to put him over Tomlinson.
So Tomlinson, I mean, when you look at some of the other rookie defensive tackles, I mean, he takes the cake in terms of tackling. It's not even
by
close.
By far.
And
even if you're going to put the sacks involved, he's got to be one of the two defensive tackles on the all-rookie team. He's got to be.
Well, when you look at the numbers much closer, I would agree with you there. I just wonder, once again, I don't know how the voting breaks down. Paul, if you know off the top of the head, is it possible, can they put, you know, 3 defensive ends on the line in this rookie class and rookie team?
Oh.
Do they actually designate?
That's a good question.
And that's another reason why I don't know if he would be a lock, because for all I know, they may just take the 4 best defensive linemen, regardless of position. Sometimes with these rookie teams, it doesn't matter whether or not they play defensive tackle or defensive end, especially in the NFL where they move personnel around.
Dan, let's ask Dan. Dan, do you know when the NFL all-rookie team comes out? Have you seen it for this past season? It is out. The official one. I'm not talking about one of the analytics people or one of the writers. The official one. Yes. It is out. Can we get access to that? I don't remember seeing it. We were talking about how we think that both Tomlinson and Engram should be on that list. Do you recall?
Well, here, I have the PWFA one that Dan
okay, the
is
Pro Football
to. So
Writers.
Here we go.
Okay.
So Tomlinson did make it. Tomlinson made it along
had
with
to.
Derek Barnett, Miles Garrett, and Carl Lawson.
And, of course, Engram's got to be on that list, too.
And Evan Engram is on it.
Okay.
Yep. So there you go.
So, no surprise.
Yeah.
What we expected.
Well, and based on the look of it, they actually took into consideration whether or not these guys lined up at defensive tackle as opposed to just necessarily
great.
Putting the four best defensive linemen. So he was recognized from a national standpoint. Now, moving along real quickly before we open up the phone lines at 201-939-4513. Davis Webb, we know, did not play. Wayne Gallman, another bright spot in this rookie class, the fourth-round pick, played 13 games, started one game, and followed, to me, a very similar resume like Paul Perkins' rookie year, where mm-hmm. he did his best work, Paul, later on in the season, which to me would put him in line, depending on what plays out in free agency, to perhaps step in as a starter or somebody that takes on a few more reps every game at the beginning of next season.
Here's what I'm going to tell you, folks, and I don't know anything about this because I've not talked to Pat Shurmur about how he views his running back core. I've not talked to Dave Gettleman about it. And so I'm kind of talking out of a black hole here, but if it were me, I'll give you my opinion. If I were running this team, I would go get myself a power back. I suspect that Orleans Darkwa is going to leave via free agency. I suspect that Shane Vereen will leave via free agency and not come back. So I would go get a power back, okay, to pair with Gallman as my 1-2 punch and make Paul Perkins my third down specialist. Okay? That's what I would do. Keep Gallman on the path that he was on, move Perkins into Vereen's shoes, and go get a bigger power back to take Darkwa's carries. LeGarrette Blount is
He's
an unrestricted
free agent
and a guy who I advocated for last season. I don't know. Is that a possibility? He's unsigned. I suppose he is. Or maybe just want to go get a power back in the draft. That's how I would configure the running back core.
Well, the Eagles have a number of free agent running backs, so Philly's going to have to choose what exactly it wants to do. You've got LeGarrette Blount as a free agent, Darren Sproles is a free agent, and Kenyon Barner is a free agent. So three of their massive group of running backs are going to hit free agency. I'm assuming Philadelphia is also going to want to try to bring some of those guys back. Corey Clement is still under contract, who had a really good rookie year. Mm-hmm. He's not a power back. I mean, let's not dismiss the fact that Philadelphia may say, LeGarrette Blount, we liked what you gave us. How about maybe coming back for another year or two? It's very possible they look to re-sign him. I don't know if it's a one-and-done type of situation for LeGarrette Blount. So,
I would agree with you.
And if
that's what I'm saying. I don't know if it's going to be possible.
No, and I'm not saying that you were insinuating he's definitely going to leave, but
he's the type of player I think they should go for, though.
He's the perfect body build of what you're selling, and based on need, if Gallman and Perkins are the only two running backs signed that Darkwood does leave, then yes, you want somebody that's a little bit different. The only thing I will add to what you said, Paul, is I'm not in a rush to take Wayne Gallman off of the field on third down either, though. I think he has value being on the field on third down. He proved that he could be a receiver and he can handle pass protection. So, you know, Paul
Perkins can too.
No, I think they both can. But my point is, if Gallman and a bigger back can handle the load, I'm not one that says you've got to take Gallman off the field just so you can get Perkins reps. If Perkins could carve out a role and they have a set amount of plays that they want to get him involved, that's fine. But Gallman, I think, has value to be on the field on third down. And I think that could grow moving forward. Because he did show something during the course of his rookie year that he's not just a runner up the gut like he did in Clemson or can run off the edge. He's also somebody that you could throw the ball to out of the backfield.
I don't disagree with that, but I would like to believe that Perkins is the type of talent that we thought he was last year. And, of course, this year things got sidetracked for him, as
because
they did
the
with a lot of guys.
Yeah.
And so it didn't happen. I think Paul Perkins is a dynamic player.
I would agree
with you.
I think
he has an elusiveness that you could really utilize in third down situations because you can get those guys out into space. And I think he's got better hands than Gallman. Gallman had some butterfingers this year
he
as
did.
A rookie.
But I guess my point is,
And Perkins can protect. We know that, too.
And he improved later in the season,
no doubt,
just like Wayne Goldman did. So the two of them, I thought, followed a very similar path during the course of their rookie campaigns. All I'm arguing is that while Goldman may have areas that he needs to improve, I would not be in a rush to take him off the field if he could continue to improve as a third down back. That's all I'm saying. But I'm still high on Perkins. Remember, I thought Perkins was going to build off his rookie year. Unfortunately, as you laid out, Paul, it's impossible to predict injuries. In an ideal world, we'd all love to know, heading into a season, who's going to miss what games, and then you could have a better idea,
that's the problem,
right, of how you could fill in the
that's
puzzle.
That's the problem.
You just don't know that. Perkins got hurt, and then that impacted his season. It opened the door for the likes of Orleans Darkwa and Wayne Goldman. We have no idea how 2018 is
going to
play out.
I give you one other name who's going to be a guy who's an unrestricted free agent as well, and he had a horrible, horrible season in Seattle. That's Eddie Lacy. He's only 27 years old. Now, he's had a lot of injuries. He's had weight problems.
Issues with the Packers.
He's had problems that have absolutely sidetracked his career. But he's also a two-time 1,000-yard rusher. You would make him the power back in a three-headed monster. He would not be required or asked to carry the ball 200 times. If you say to Eddie Lacy, look, all I need out of you are 120 carries maybe as part of this mixture. He's only 27 years old yet. You know, they tell you you can maybe get something out of a back till he's 30. So, and after having such a horrible year in Seattle when he had injury problems.
The value's not very high.
He should not be able to command a whole ton of money.
I would agree with you there.
That would be a guy I would certainly think about. I'm not saying that I'd sign him, but I'd think about him.
Well, especially if you're not expecting him to come in and carry the ball 20 times. If you can get a decent deal done, then I think he's a serviceable back that he could give you about 11 or 12 carries a game. I don't think that's necessarily asking for too much. It's just, you know, does he check all of the lines in terms of durability, or can you predict his durability as best as you can? Because at the end of the day, even if he's worth it from a financial standpoint, Paul, if he's only going to be on the field for three or four games, you might as well develop a younger player, is my argument. But you don't know that. It's impossible, once again, to predict that.
You could also look within the division at Alfred Morris, unrestricted free agent from the Cowboys. And I think he showed that he still has some power in his legs, too.
Well, I was arguing all this time that even if Elliott got hurt or was sidelined because of the suspension, Morris is a guy that proved more than enough that he can handle the load in Washington, and he did that. He was actually very productive for Elliott when Elliott was suspended.
Yes, he was.
But once again, if you're Dallas, do you have to worry about keeping the insurance policy around?
No.
Because there's value there, just like with the Eagles and LeGarrette Blount. Real quickly, the rest of the class, Avery Moss and Adam Biznavati. Moss, 11 games, 2 starts. Biznavati, 1 game right at the end of the season in which he started. And these are two complementary players that were very young, still very raw, Paul. Mm-hmm. But once again, it still goes back to the theme of, for the most part, everybody got some playing time, and a lot of it was due to injuries, and that's what you want out of a rookie class. If you get these guys some valuable experience in year one, it's only going to help in terms of their development moving forward. But I don't know if there's an awful lot you could take away from what Moss and Biznavati provided this season.
No, I think, you know, you look at those guys as projects coming in last year, and they remain projects going into year two. I do think that with James Betcher as the new defensive coordinator, we know how he likes stand-up defensive ends in his hybrid scheme. I think Avery Moss might be a guy who really benefits from that, to be honest with you. I do see some skills there. There's no question. He's got some ability. Now, can he translate that physical ability into what Betcher's going to ask him to do? I think there's a chance. I really do. I think he could be a key player on this team, similar to the Devon Kennard role. He's an unrestricted
free agent.
Who is a
jack-of-all-trades type of guy.
And honestly, again, being a UFA, you don't know if he's coming back. But he was a guy who did have that flexibility to play a number of different roles in the defense. And again, with Betcher's system, that role is a very important one.
Hybrid roles are extremely crucial
for him
in his defense, yes.
Monumental.
Players that you can move around and you can utilize in different spots. And Kennard, you're right, he played linebacker. They brought him back down to the line. The benefit, though, with Kennard was Kennard had a lot of experience, Paul, going back to his days at USC of moving around, because how many defensive coordinators did he work
with?
He
went
with
the Colts. Like four of them.
During his collegiate tenure. So he came into the NFL saying, hey, you know what? You want to move me to the line? You want to move me back? That's fine. I'm comfortable. They moved me all around during college. Whereas some other players, they need to adapt to that because they hadn't had nearly as much experience like that in college.
Well, let's see what Moss can do in year two with the new system, the new defensive coordinator. And again, a guy who, in my opinion, is one of those willing learners.
Yeah.
He didn't come in here thinking, oh, you know, I got drafted by the NFL. I did really well. You know, I was at Nebraska, then at Youngstown State. I'm going to come in and get 10 sacks. You know, I just want to rush the quarterback. I want to come off the edge. I want to get my – no, that's not Avery Moss. You've met Avery Moss in the locker room. He is a very nice, mild-mannered, modest kind of guy who just wants to go out there and ball. He just wants to go out and ball and have fun and just go out and make plays any way he can. So I think he's going to be very agreeable and probably very excited by what Betcher's got in mind for him.
Well, he's an important player to watch. And the reason I bring him up is, Paul, every offseason we're always talking about, okay, the two defensive ends that start, such as a JPP and Olivier Vernon. But we're always talking about, will they get consistency out of that third option, that joker type of defensive end?
Well,
and we've been talking about the double O's, the Kerry wins, and with some of these players, you get the flashes, right? You get the game or two where it's like, okay, hey, they filled in admirably. We saw that with double O, we saw that with Kerry win, and then, you know, a few other games pass by, and you just don't see that. Are we going to get to the point where we're looking at Avery Moss a little bit differently?
Kerry Wynn is a fundamentally sound, run-stopping-first defensive end, a conventional 4-3 defensive end. Romeo Okwara is
He's
a conventional 4-3 defensive end, more of a pass rusher, I think, than a run-stopper. But neither one of those two guys, and of course, Double O is not even here anymore, but neither one of those guys, Wynn or Okwara, in my mind, are really suited for the hybrid role that Moss can play.
That's fair.
And, I mean, they're much more standard 4-3 defensive ends. Look at the size of these guys. Look at the frame of these guys. They're not going to be standing up a whole lot, I don't think. So Moss could have an edge in terms
of getting on the field. There's no doubt about that. I'm just looking at it beyond that, Paul. I'm looking at it more of production, where you can say, we're going to get this out of that player
game. Right now, you don't know what you're going to get.
And that's my point. But that's why it's an interesting position to monitor, because it's been a position where, over the last few offseasons, we've been talking about, do the Giants get to the point where they have that reliable third option who is a defensive end slash perhaps an inside defensive tackle? Real quickly, so the Giants got a B-plus based on this article. The Cowboys got a B for their rookie class. The Eagles got a B, and the Redskins got a TBD/B because of all the injuries. And the point of the article, though, in fairness, and this is why I want, you know, to be clear, the reason why those other teams got Bs is the conclusion was so many of the players got hurt, it was very difficult to assess the type of production that all of those rookie classes provided for their respective teams, whereas the Giants, it was a little bit easier because, for the most part, everybody stayed healthy and got on the field. So that's why the Giants led the mark in terms of the grading system.
Now, I will say this. Picking number two, if they keep that pick, if they don't trade it like we have advocated, and they wind up getting offensive linemen in free agency, there's nothing wrong with drafting Saquon Barkley and telling him that, guess what, you're going to be part of this three running back mix, and we'll work you in as much as you show you can handle when you step on the field. If he shows he can handle a bigger role, then you put him right into the deep end of the water and you let him do it. If he can't, there's nothing wrong with the size he has, because he's a pretty strong fella.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing wrong with making him the power back if you want to.
Well, also, I think you're going to want to play him on special teams too. So you want to at least balance both of those.
So, you know, you're not going to want to overwork him right away. With the guys you have and the mix you have, Barkley could easily be weaned in and get more and more carries or maybe a bigger role as you go down into the second, third part of the season. But, you know, so if you don't want to go proven free agent with that, I got no problem. You could certainly, again, provided you get offensive lineman and free agency, you could draft Barkley at number two, and he could be a component in that backfield mix.
201-939-4513. That is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants chat. Before we open up the phone lines, we just want to be clear. There are reports circulating that the Giants are going to hire former Carolina Panthers offensive coordinator Mike Shula as their OC. Nothing is official whatsoever from the team perspective at this point, but we are acknowledging, we are seeing the reports just like you are. So if you want to call up and address it, we're just making it very clear. The team has not made anything official whatsoever in terms of the coaching staff, specifically with respect to the offensive coordinator. Let's open up the lines. Tim is in Jersey. He gets us going. Tim, what's happening?
Nothing. I got home. The Giants will sign Eric Decker if they cut Brandon Marshall.
Okay. What else you got for us, Tim? Anything else? All right. Well, Tim always likes to call in and make a bold prediction, so he is saying that if the Giants choose to move on from Brandon Marshall, Eric Decker perhaps is another veteran wideout to take a look at who spent the last season with the Tennessee Titans.
I don't want to disparage Eric Decker in any way. I mean, I understand he's going to be a free agent, and he's been very productive in this league. But if you are going to move on from Marshall, aren't you going to want a skyscraper?
Somebody who can fill that void compared to what you already have
different
on the roster
style
with
receiver.
Beckham and Shepard.
Wouldn't you agree?
No, I don't think that's necessarily a stretch at all. I would think that you'd want somebody within that ballpark. Though, off the top of my head here, how big is Eric Decker? Let's see, in terms of height. Because, you know, he's somebody that sometimes is overlooked. Eric Decker is listed at 6'3". I mean, compared to what they have on the rest of the roster, Paul.
He doesn't play like a skyscraper.
I mean, I get that. But compared to, once again, what you have, you could line him up in areas opposite of where you utilize Beckham and Shepard. I don't think it's something that can't be worked with. I get it in terms of how he's utilized. Listen, he had a really good season with the Jets. Early in his career, he was very productive with the Broncos. He was quiet this year with Tennessee. They were trying to move through some of their younger receivers, had a case of the dropsies in the playoffs. So, you know, those are all things you have to look at. Depending on what he demands on the open market, I don't think it's necessarily a terrible person to target, considering he's got a lot of a veteran experience and he's got a little bit more size and height than some of the other options. It's not a terrible option to settle on, I guess is my point. Especially if you're not looking at him as a number one wide receiver, which you wouldn't under these circumstances.
Yeah, I'd probably go elsewhere, but I'm not saying I wouldn't think about it, but I'd probably wind up going elsewhere, maybe even the draft, because there are plenty of receivers in the draft, too.
Which is fair as well. Patrick is in North Carolina. Patrick, what's happening?
Hey, good morning, guys. I just wanted to get through a couple things and hear your responses after. Being that we're all dealing with speculation at this point in the offseason, being that there's not very much news coming out, the 3-4 defense that veteran might be putting in excites me. Paul, you're always talking about it's harder to find 4-3 defensive ends in the draft because you get a bunch of tweeners. You get guys that are more suited to play the outside linebacker position because it's more suited to the college game.
It's true.
So it's harder to get that traditional 4-3 defensive end coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I hear you guys talking about is how the pieces that we have mix and match. You guys stole a little bit of my thunder. My question as far as mentioning Avery Moss and Devon Kennard, but I'm looking at the linebacker core, and one of the things that jumps out to me is that we have one inside linebacker, which is possibly Goodson, and we talked about, well, you guys talked about Vernon playing the role of being an outside linebacker because he played that role similarly in Miami.
Okay.
And I don't know if we see JPP being able to stand up and being the other outside guy.
Not much. He's done a few of those things over the course of time, but that's not his forte.
Yeah, I mean, they've put him back in coverage a few times, but I don't know how consistently they would do that.
And I know that they say that one of the toughest things for when you're taking the guy's hand out of the dirt and you're standing him up is his line of sight and the angles and being able to change the aspect of which the lanes you rush. And being a transition from having your hand in the dirt from standing up. So it's going to be interesting to see if they do take a guy like Avery, who's still young. It's still, you know, I think an advantage, like you guys were saying, that he's still raw. So you can kind of maybe coach him up a little bit and change that aspect of his game. But I'm looking at the linebacker core, and I'm looking at free agents, and I'm seeing a lot of guys that are long in the tooth. And I'm wondering, Paulie, if you take a look at the free agents, who possible names that jump out to you that might be a possibility for an inside backer, an outside backer, or some possible names that might be available in the middle to late rounds in the draft for possibilities for the Giants.
Well, you know, it seems to me that based on what Betcher wants to do with his scheme, you're going to be talking about a lot of sub-packages. I mean, he's big on that, and he's big on having hybrid safeties come down and play linebacker.
Yeah.
Okay? So let me just say this. Don't think of getting your typical old-time, old-school prototype linebackers to fill up this roster, because they've got a situation where they're going to overturn that position. With the free agents they have, we've talked about them before, Robinson, Casillas,
Kennard.
They're all free agents. Herzlick was on IR last year. He's a free agent.
He's also a free agent. Yeah.
So they don't have much coming back. You're basically going to rebuild the position from scratch. Well, if you're going to do that, you might as well get the athletes that Betcher uses in his system. And if that means you go after a couple of oversized safeties who are then going to help play those monster positions, that may be the way you go instead of trying to acquire your typical linebackers, if that makes any sense to you.
Or he may utilize the existing safeties on the roster to convert a little bit.
Well, again, we think that Collins and Adams, Burhe, if he's still here, Burhe is certainly a guy who plays physical kind of ball, who would be maybe a guy that might be a hybrid of some sorts. Darian Thompson's not. Okay, that's not his game. You got to be stronger and more physical. Adams and Collins are certainly two guys
Thompson's
who can do
more
it.
Of a center fielder. Okay. Burhe, if you go back to college, the reason why he was called the missile is because they ran him from the backfield all the way into the line of scrimmage for him to tackle. So it's very possible that he utilizes the safeties and moves them around. And what you have to understand, and I've said this on the show multiple times, when Betcher was in Arizona, they were running the base 3-4 only about 30% of the time.
Right.
He was going to your point, Paul, the sub-packages, the nickel defenses, more often than the base. So you have to question then, well, how many times is four linebackers actually going to be on the field? So if they're not going to be on the field all the time, maybe the emphasis doesn't necessarily have to be we've got to find four linebackers if we're not going to put them on the field 90% of the time.
Okay, so I guess my remaining question, as far as what you see out there in the free agent market and what you see coming out of the draft, especially the free agent market.
I have not done draft work yet, so I can't give you an answer at all on that. And as far as free agency, I would tend to think because he values speed and athleticism in those spots more than anything else, you probably are going to want to lean a little bit more toward the draft, because the older veteran free agents who are coming available are probably either more banged up or slower than some of the young, quick guys who are going to be coming out of the draft. That would be my first gut reaction to your question. I'd probably lean a little bit more towards getting them in the draft.
Well, if you look at Arizona, he leaned on a variety of veterans and young guys. I mean, they drafted Buda Baker, and Baker's that versatile safety who you can move around. I mean, I'm looking at the free agent list. I didn't look at it that carefully, but, for example, Carlos Dansby's a free agent. He's 36 years old, but he was a guy that knows the system, so my point is, do you look to bring in somebody that has worked with James Betcher or knows the system that can help mentor some of the younger guys? It's hard to say whether or not they would go after a veteran type of guy like that. I mean, Mason Foster, he was a free agent who was attractive. He just re-signed with the Redskins, and they ran a 3-4 defense. So there's an example of, you know, somebody who was young because he's 29, and the Redskins made sure that they didn't lose him, which you have to understand. Most teams are going to lock up their young linebackers, especially if they're productive.
The biggest part of the mystery of this, when a guy like that asks about, you know, names, we haven't talked to Betcher. We haven't talked to Shermer. We saw his press conference. We have not had opportunities to truly sit down and talk at length with Gettleman, with Shermer, with Betcher, with whoever the new AC is going to be, if it's Mike Shula. until we are allowed to sit and talk with these guys two, three, four times, 10, 15, 20 minutes, and find out what it is that they're looking for and what they want to do, it's really foolish, irresponsible, and premature for us to throw out, you know, kinds of guys, because we don't know what kind of puzzle they're putting together.
Well, and we also don't know what they think of the free agents.
What they think of the guys that are currently on the roster.
And that's what I mean. I should have clarified. The guys who are currently on the roster that are due to hit free agency, for all we know, they envision them fitting into the scheme and using them in some capacity. So that's another reason. And the other thing I'll add to what you're saying, Paul, is, you know, last year we talked about all the offensive linemen that were free agents. And we had conversations ad nauseum about Andrew Whitworth and this guy and that guy. And then all of a sudden the market starts and these guys are getting exorbitant contracts, right? And everybody's wondering, well, why didn't the Giants go after them? Because you just don't know how the market is going to play out. So that's another reason why we could sit here and go over every single free agent, whether or not they're a good fit for the Giants. And for all we know, there's going to be mega bucks thrown at these players, and the Giants just don't think they're worth that type of investment. So that's why it's also very difficult to speculate.
Great example of that story. It was over a year ago last November, going into that offseason, when I was already looking at the free agent list, and I said to people, Andrew Whitworth is going to be the best veteran tackle available in free agency. And if I were the Giants, I would seriously make him the number one target. And then what happened? The clock started to roll, and we saw, the prices are going up and up and up and up and up and up and up. And look at the contract that Whitworth is going to get now.
Yeah.
Guess what? Given the Giants' circumstances, he's off the list.
Well, it
can't afford him.
It drastically
can't
changes
afford him.
Things.
Changes everything. And yet, I get bombed on Twitter and on the phone calls. Oh, you know, why didn't you want Whitworth? I wanted Whitworth. I just realized that they couldn't afford him.
Well, you have to always take into consideration.
Change.
Yeah, you have to take into consideration the market. I can make a case for a lot of different free agents being a good fit for the Giants, but you know what? We're not dealing with monopoly money, Paul.
No, we're not.
We're not going back to the bank and then just whipping out the bucks.
Funny part is, you know, and like when I talked about the running backs before, I could tell you what I'd like. I'd like the Giants to go back to the dominant 4-3 defense they had in 2007. Okay, and I'd like to have Strahan and Tuck and Umanyora and Antonio Pierce-Rome in the middle and Big Freddie Robbins playing defensive tackle. I'd love to have all that stuff, but guess what? I can't have them. You know, I can't have them. That's what I want, but I can't have them.
Reality versus fantasy, the biggest difference. And I know a lot of fans sometimes live in the fantasy land when the reality is a wake-up call because of the finances involved in everything. All right, let's head back to the lines here. We got Jay in England. Jay, what's happening?
Hey, what's going on, guys? I'm going to try to make this as quick as possible.
All right. What do you got?
Let me start with the quarterbacks in this draft, upcoming draft. It's always a hype. Every year it seems like there's always a hype on these quarterbacks. Paul, yeah, I know you want to trade back, and I'm with you because I'm talking to a lot of Giants fans on Reddit or on the social pages, and they're like, well, we haven't drafted this high in a long time, so we should draft a quarterback. That infuriates me so much because Josh Rosen has an extensive injury history, from concussions to a knee injury. He had a shoulder. He went under the knife for his shoulder in his throwing arm. He had a hand injury in his throwing arm. The kid is frail. He looks like if he comes into the league, he's one good hit from an NFL pro from blowing up on the field to me. Darnold definitely needs another year. College-wise, or another couple years to develop. He makes a lot of bad decisions from what I've seen. The other prospect, Josh Allen, is raw as hell, and I wouldn't touch him within the first couple rounds. Baker Mayfield is probably the only prospect that's kind of interesting, but that height, with that height, you have to kind of move the line to kind of make a path for him.
No, you don't have to do that. I mean, Drew Brees is a small guy, Jay. Yeah, he's fine.
Yeah,
he does a lot of rollouts.
Well, he does, but Baker Mayfield, part of his appeal is his mobility. I mean, you're not going to necessarily want Baker Mayfield to be a statue, even if you drafted him. You do want him to maintain some of his mobility.
But we don't have no lineman that's like a Richie Seibert that can run out and like put a hit on.
But here's the big
picture. We got to rebuild that line first. Is what they got to do.
That is certainly. But Jay, what the way you're talking about some of these quarterback prospects is if they're going to come in week one of the 2018 season and start. We know that that's not the case because they came out and they said Eli Manning's the quarterback. So anyone you draft is going to probably be watching and learning for at least the first year and is going to have an entire year to adapt to the National Football League. So the state of the offensive line could very well be different at the start of 2019 or 2020 than it currently stands right now as we enter the offseason.
Okay, so would it not be better to trade back and build the offensive line if we know these guys are going to sit for 2 years?
Absolutely.
Well, I think that's one argument that is valid, but who's to say that they may not address the offensive line in free agency? They don't necessarily have to commit just to the draft to improve the offensive line. I think ideally you want to do a combination of both. The Minnesota Vikings, last offseason, where Pat Shurmur just came from, they brought in two free agents in Riley Reiff and Remmers, and they also drafted a kid in the middle round who ended up being their starting center.
Fine.
Yeah, so, I mean, you should want to do it both ways. You shouldn't necessarily say the only way to improve the offensive line is the draft.
So I'm looking at, and I always use the RG3 trade. And it's kind of like a bait, right? Because you look at that trade.
Makes great sense.
It was two, and they got a first round, a second round, I think another first round in the next year, and another first round in the year after that.
Yeah, the Rams got a lot of picks.
They flopped some later on picks, too, then kind of shifted a couple around to even out the price a little bit. So it's a little bit more sticky than just a clean one for four picks or whatever kind of trade. But I know what you're talking about.
Right. If we can come away with something similar to that, because, I mean, like, I'm thinking, like, if the QB hype is going to be anywhere, anything that I think is going to be this year, there's teams. And I know we're kind of – you don't want to trade back too far, right? You don't want to go back as far as 15. That's where Arizona is. And they'll trade up if they want to trade up, or maybe the Jets, if that's a possibility. I don't know if the Giants would want to trade with the Jets. I don't know that dynamic. But I just think it's a better situation – to trade back and build, get more depth. If you do see a guy that you want next year, you have the capital to make those moves. And smart GMs do that. I just don't think that – I don't see the hype with this class. I don't like any of these quarterbacks. And I guess my question is Davis Webb, from what he did in college to what you see on the field or practice field, compare him to these prospects. Is he either on par, subpar, or above these prospects? And I'll take it off the line.
All right, Jay. Appreciate the phone call. Well, I mean, we've been asked this question a lot, and, you know, from some of the draft experts that I've talked with, you know, they have rated the quarterbacks that are projected to go in the top 10 is a little bit higher than Davis Webb at this point last year. But, you know, we haven't seen Davis Webb on the football field in a regular season capacity, so it's hard to say how much perhaps he is ahead now of the current rookie class, because most of the comparisons, Paul, as I mentioned, are Davis Webb coming out of college versus the Josh Rosens, the Baker Mayfields, and so forth. So they could say that this group is ahead of Davis Webb coming out of college, but that doesn't mean that as Davis Webb stands right now is inferior to where those college prospects are. So it's very difficult to give a straightforward answer, I think, on that subject.
Extremely difficult, especially since Davis Webb also was in the middle of a transfer. You know, his college career was not a solid 4 years straight or solid 3 years straight. He was at Texas Tech, transferred out with Cal. In addition to that, he lost some time due to injury. He spent some time on the bench. You know, he didn't get a full college experience and a full developmental time while he was playing NCAA football.
At the same time, Baker Mayfield also dealt with interruption too.
Just remember this. So Mayfield transferred out because he was behind Davis Webb. See, everybody says, well, Webb transferred out because Mahomes was the guy who was going to take his job at Texas Tech and wound up being the guy there. Well, Mayfield left Cal because Davis Webb was there.
Well, the way that it happened was Mayfield got hurt. Davis Webb took over as the starter.
And Davis Webb got hurt, too.
Well, Mayfield came back, and then Mayfield, even before the bowl game, announced that he didn't like the direction of the coaching staff and decided he wanted to transfer.
Whatever the reason
so,
may be.
So, I mean, those facts are a little bit all over the place, I guess is my point.
Right, yeah. But for those who throw Mahomes in my face and say, well, how could Davis Webb be any good? Mahomes beat him out.
Well, but that's no way to compare,
it's
guys.
Ridiculous.
Kids transfer
it's
all
ridiculous.
The time. Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I will say this. I'm not going to give you names because I don't give up the scouts who I know around the league. But I will tell you this, there were some scouts, and I'm not going to tell you it was everybody because it was not everybody, but there were some scouts around this league I know because I have talked to some personnel guys who told me they thought trying to gauge on a level playing field at Cal that Webb was a preferred pro prospect over Goff. I'm just putting that out there for you. Not to say he will be better than Goff.
It's just those are what people were saying.
But at the time, in referring to their notes, when Webb was at Cal compared to when Goff was at Cal, the thought was Webb might be a better long-term prospect, specifically because of his size and the gun that he's got, the ability to make the long throw.
It comes down to opportunity in the National Football League, regardless of the speculation, Paul.
Back
to Tom Brady was a late-round pick. Drew Bledsoe got hurt. Brady came in, made the most of his opportunity, and now a lot of people talk about him as the greatest quarterback ever. So, you know, did anybody think that Tom Brady was going to get that opportunity when he was drafted in New England? So, I mean, you could sit here and make an argument about a lot of different quarterbacks. They don't get the opportunity. It's very hard to judge and tell you that he's on this path to succeed because every year there's a new draft class that comes in. There's new competitions that are happening at OTAs in spring and at practice. And right now the Giants need to evaluate what is the best value at the second overall pick. Is it going with a quarterback? Is it taking Saquon Barkley? Is it moving down? You can make an argument for all three of those things that I just laid out. I think you can make an argument for all three.
You absolutely can. And that's why the draft is not an exact science.
Yep.
Okay? It's just not, and it never will be. If it wasn't exact science, we could all make the right decision ahead of time, and there would be no guessing game. And the ratings for the draft would go down because nobody would care. It would already be a foregone conclusion. It's why, though, that, I take a stance, you take a stance, John takes a stance. Look, we're in the business of compiling as much information as we can because that's what we get paid to do, and then come up with what we believe to be a logical assessment or a logical analysis based on what we are paid to do and who we're paid to talk to, what we're paid to watch, what we're paid to listen to, and then we have to extrapolate something from that, okay? We do the best we can with that. Now, at the same time, it doesn't mean it's in stone and it's going to happen because it's still a crapshoot. Look, if GMs get fired over making bad draft picks, how are we supposed to be better than them and get every single opinion we have about a draft pick to be smack on the money? Not going to happen. But we are going to give you our opinion based on all of the things that we've meatloafed together, which is why it's hysterical when any writer or any fan or any blogger comes after me with guns blazing about, have to take a quarterback number two, have to,
Of course.
But they're not paid. Most of these people are not paid to know these things. Like, they know in cement that there is a franchise quarterback among the five or six that everyone are talking about. Oh, really? You're 100% sure? And you know exactly which one it is? They've got even less of a chance of being right than we do in talking about Davis Webb.
Well, the reason, of course, I don't disagree with anything you just said. But it goes back to the emphasis on the quarterback in the National Football League, Paul. That's why there is so much talk about the Giants are high. They're at number two. You've got to pick a quarterback because you have to find Eli Manning's successor. It's a must. It needs to be taken care of. That has to be priority number one. And what I often say is, just based on what we saw in the Super Bowl, there's a lot of other facets of a football team that play as integral of a role as the quarterback in terms of helping solidify a victory. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to revisit that. I've said that on multiple occasions.
Correct.
I sound like a broken record. But there's also multiple ways, Paul, for you to acquire the quarterback. And it doesn't necessarily have to happen with the number two overall pick. It could happen by moving down later on in the first round. It could be happening by getting one in the third round. It could also be happening on the free agent market, which we're going to see with like a Kirk Cousins this offseason. Or it could happen via trade, like what happened with the Redskins as they acquired Alex Smith. I know it's not official. So I just named three or four other options in which you can acquire your successor where it doesn't necessarily have to be signed, sealed, and delivered at number two.
You understand, though, as I do, the sexy headline with the number two overall pick is, we're going to take the rookie franchise quarterback.
Of course.
We know how that works.
Yeah, but there's other options, and there's no crime in laying those other options out. That's
absolutely
the big picture thing. All right, let's head back to the lines. Jay's in Georgia. Jay, what's happening?
Hey, guys, what's going on, man?
All right, Jay, what do you got for us?
I just want to say you guys are funny, man.
We try to be. We try to be.
Got to keep things light.
Take your hand off the panic button. All I want to say is, look, this is based on after free agency. So after free agency, if the Giants do decide to fix the offensive line, John was talking about it yesterday. Does this sound far-fetched? He was talking about top 10 trade downs, but I've been looking at the draft order. You know, Buffalo had a quarterback controversy last year. Do you think it's far-fetched for, Buffalo to trade up to draft a quarterback and put us down in the 20s, or would that be too far-fetched?
Yeah, I think Buffalo might be interested in moving up. They're 21-22, right?
Correct, yes. They got back-to-back picks because of what happened with Patrick Mahomes.
Do you really want to go down that far? That, to me, is a bit too far. I'm willing to expand myself to 15 to the Cardinals because I think at 15, you're a lock to get one of the stud offensive linemen at 15. I really can't see all the stud linemen going before 15. 21-22 could get a little dicey, maybe.
It all depends on what they're targeting, what player the Giants are high on. Without knowing that, it's hard to say. I mean, for all I know, if the Giants say they love a quarterback and they think a quarterback is going to fall to the late first round, I'm just going to throw out a hypothetical. Like a Baker Mayfield or like a Lamar Jackson out of Louisville.
Right.
If they're high on that quarterback, Paul, and they move down, they get extra prospects, then maybe they're comfortable moving to 21 or 22. But to your point, if they're high on an offensive lineman and they think they're going to go in the teens, then maybe they would shy away from a deal like that.
We can probably say one thing with about 99% certainty. If they move down out of the top five, and probably if they move down at all, they're not going to have a shot at Barkley.
Yes, I think we can say that for certainty.
Right. Now,
then
look,
again, they
now,
may not even have a shot at Barkley, even at number two. He may go one, so... go ahead, Jay.
Hey, listen, after, people have been high on Barkley, man, I love the kid, man. Looks like a great prospect to join the Giants. But at the end of the day, we were based off, three-headed monsters like y'all were saying early when we had Brandon Jacobs, Ahmad Bradshaw, Derek Ward. When we were running like that, it was cool. Now I'm looking at the prospect who played in, what was it, the Senior Bowl, Rashad Penny. He's not too bad. And you can wait till later on.
I understand. Well, you know what? The earth, wind, and fire combination, when the Giants did have those three backs and doing what they were doing, I really loved it. I thought it was terrific. And they were a heavy run-oriented offense in those days, which is what Gettleman and Shurmur, based on their comments, want to get back to. So I'm really very much in favor of a three running back system. Again, trying to more clearly define the roles as opposed to a couple of years ago when they had all these backs and they didn't know what they were doing with them and they just kept subbing them in and subbing them out. Nobody found rhythm and they couldn't get anything really established on a regular basis. That's not what I'm talking about. Go back to Earth, Wind, and Fire when each one of those guys knew exactly what he was supposed to do and they did it well.
And they also rode the hot hand, too. I mean, I remember the Derek Ward Carolina game, right? Late in the season. That's the game I'll always remember. Ward just ran wild in that game, and that game was huge. Had huge playoff implications.
Wound up getting a big free agent money in Tampa a short while later.
Let me say, I got one more thing for you guys, man. I want to just say to all the fans out there that's panicking, dude, I believe Davis Webb can be Eli's successor, man. There's no need to, draft the quarterbacks, man. Davis Webb. Man, the guy's awesome, man. I haven't seen him play on a regular game, but, his energy, the way he talks, the interviews, I believe he's the next thing smoking in New York, man.
All right, Jay.
Appreciate it.
Paul fully supports your message. You just brought another smile to Paul DeTino.
I'm on board.
Jay is signing up to the Paul DeTino School of Thought. based on that. All right, let's head back to the phone lines. Kevin is in Phoenix. Kevin, what's happening?
Hey, guys.
How we doing, Kevin?
For the record, doing good. I am in favor of trading down and not taking a quarterback.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. My question is, a lot of what we're hearing about Davis Webb is his potential and what we've seen throughout the year. Does this also apply to Chad Wheeler and Adam Biznovati? Because I don't hear their names mentioned for the offensive line and possibly moving into a starting position.
Well, I think if you're the Giants and you're going to go with Eli Manning this year at 37 years old, I don't know that you want to take a chance on a guy like Wheeler or Biznovati becoming a starter, because that is still kind of a reach for me. I think that it's certainly possible that Wheeler and Biznovati make the team. They're going to be given chances to win jobs on the 2018 roster. But I think if you're planning on your 37-year-old quarterback trying to get the Giants back into the playoffs this year, you really are going to have to say, A, get veteran help that's proven, and B, get solid, stud, blue-chip, can't-miss guys in the first two rounds.
Yeah, I think they're in the conversation in terms of competition and would be brought back, be on the 90-man roster. You know, you look at, I'm bringing up the numbers here, Wheeler, 11 games, 5 starts, Biznovati right at the end of the season. So Biznovati, you only have one game. That's his sample size. I mean, that's absolutely nothing. Wheeler, you have a little bit more because of injury. He was thrown into the fire. But I still don't think, to answer your question, between 6 starts for the two of them, that you're sold, that you're just bringing them back and they're going to be starters. You bring them back, they're competition, but that doesn't mean that you don't want to upgrade this offseason.
I mean, let's put it this way. I think even Chad Wheeler would admit to you, if he was in this room right now, that if the Giants drafted Zeus Jr., Orlando Brown, okay, Brown would be coming in with a leg up on Chad Wheeler with an opportunity to win a starting job. I mean, Brown's a blue chipper. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
All right, Kevin. Appreciate the phone call.
Thanks, Kevin.
You got it. Thanks so much for weighing in. How about Mike in New Jersey? Mike, what's happening?
Hey, how's it going?
Hi. Good night, Mike. What do you got?
Number one, I'm of the mindset that the Giants should trade back and get some picks and maybe even a player if they can get a player for trading back. But I wanted to mention some running backs out of college that I thought looked pretty good if they don't happen to get the top two. Just say they don't get Barkley and they don't get Goose. I'd like you guys to look at some film for these two guys and tell me what you think of them. The more popular one is Sonny Michael out of Georgia. In my opinion, he's more of a speed guy than a physical runner. But if the Giants were looking for more of a physical short yard option, this guy kind of reminds me of Samaje Perine from last year.
Love Perine.
Perine. Royce Freeman out of Oregon. He's 5'11", and he's about 240, but he's got some pretty good breakaway speed. If you guys could check out some film and on like the next show or maybe, you know, whatever, a show down the road, just give me your opinions on him.
Well, we'll do, certainly. I mean, once again, we were talking about the running back position earlier. You have Paul Perkins and you have Wayne Goleman both on rookie contracts, and they have drafted a running back recently in each of the last 2 years. It's possible they now say, hey, we want to go in the direction of free agency. And I'm not saying that Pat Shurmur is going to adopt everything that happened with Minnesota and Dave Gettleman's going to adopt everything that happened with Carolina. But, you know, they did, for both of their previous stops, a mixture of youth and a veteran presence. For example, Minnesota last year, you drafted Dalvin Cook, they signed Latavius Murray in free agency. So the Giants may say, we've got two young guys in the mix, now it's time to bring in an established, bigger back in free agency to complement these two younger guys. That may be the philosophy, as opposed to going to the draft once again and having three relatively young backs who only have about 2-3 years combined of NFL experience.
How about Nick Chubb of Georgia?
Well, there's another guy, yeah.
You know, I appreciate that he had the knee injury, but he's come back and done everything and more than what anybody could have expected. Again, the medical folks would have to give me a total thumbs up on him. You know, that long term, they think he is durable enough to give me several years in the NFL. But I don't, you know, he's going to be, might even be there at the top of the third round.
Well,
that's even possible that he is, you know. I couldn't cry if they picked him.
And you could find a running back in the later rounds if you're looking to add some versatility. But at the same
time, you like Chubb?
At the same time, I think you could also go in the direction of a veteran free agent. Which, if you were to ask me,
we gave you some names before.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. If you were to ask me to assess the roster right now for running back, and knowing what we talked about earlier with Vereen and Darqua as free agents, you're left with youth. There really is no veteran presence in the backfield right now, Paul, if you look at this roster. Now, I'm not saying that you need a veteran to have success in the backfield. I mean, there's plenty of rookies that have come in day one, Ezekiel Elliott, Leonard Fournette. They didn't need a veteran to baby them in order to know where their assignments are and how to run through holes. That's not the argument I'm making. I'm just saying it's also good to have a mixture in the room, and most of these power backs that are going to be available are of the veteran variety that I think could be a nice mix of these.
Don't totally gloss over the fact that the Cowboys had a couple of veterans in that room when Elliott walked in.
Yeah, you had Darren McFadden, you had Alfred Morris. I get that.
So
of course,
I'm sure, even though he's a tremendous talent,
those guys
were in his ear from the very get-go about what it means to be an NFL back.
And that's valuable, but I don't think that's the end-all, be-all. I guess my point is oh, my God, you need the veteran in the room or else the rookie's going to be lost. That's the whole point why you have a coaching staff.
Yes,
you have a coaching staff to mentor and make sure that these players know what they're doing. Let's peruse Twitter here real quickly before we wrap things up. A variety of different views and opinions on various different topics that we addressed over the course of this program. At Gruen Ben, we didn't even get to see Webb throw in the preseason because he was too busy running for his life. I say if we don't draft a quarterback in round one, Webb gets to start preseason weeks 1 and 4 to see what he's got. Well, it doesn't really matter. Even if they draft a quarterback, Davis Webb is going to get opportunities in the preseason, Paul. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's a stretch at all. So it doesn't matter whether they take somebody at number two or they take somebody later on in the round. Webb and these young quarterbacks are going to have to get playing time during the preseason. That's when Ryan Nassib got all his playing time, Paul. So that, to me, I think is a given, regardless of what happens. At Mark, former Chicago, maybe with Buffalo trade down for the 21 and 22, their second rounder in 2018 and their first rounder or second rounder in 2019, he's arguing. So that's an interesting Bills.
I don't know that I'd want to go to do it for that little. I think I need more. If they're going to come up from 21-22 to come all the way up to 2, they'd have to give me another pick in addition to what he'd asked for.
Well, but do you care if it's a first rounder or a second rounder, that additional pick? Can they give you another second rounder, let's say?
Well, I'm going to probably need 2 2s and 2 1s. In addition to what they're
He's right now laying out 2 2s and a 1, essentially.
I'm going to need more than that. Now, you want me to go down that far in the first round?
Well, but remember, I should say you're also getting 21 and 22 based on this.
You're going to have to give me another one if I'm going to do
that. Okay, here's another one real quickly before we sign off. At ColeWiz88, I'll take Buffalo's 2 first-round picks this year, 21 and 22, and the second or a third, I'm assuming from this year as well.
Okay.
And then their first or second next year to move back. So 2 first-rounders for this year, a second or a third from this year, and then a first or a second from the following year. I think you're still asking for another pick under that breakdown. Well, you're just greedy and you want as much
I don't
blame you. So.
I'm looking to squeeze as much juice out of this orange as I possibly can.
Yeah.
And you know what? If I can get some poor slob out there to overpay because they're so enamored with one of these sexy college quarterbacks, I'm making them pay every last dime in their wallet.
Well, let the bidding begin, I always say. But then at the point where the clock is ticking, you're eventually going to have to make a deal that you can get the most out of compared to what everybody else offered. All right, with that being said, that'll wrap up the program today. Certainly appreciate all the phone calls, all the tweets. Big Blue Kickoff Live back up and running tomorrow at noon Eastern, each and every weekday right here on Giants.com. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday and stay locked to Giants.com for all the latest. Have a good one.